Today, my guest is Trevor Tenafum, who is managing principal at FS Vector. Welcome, Trevor, to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Now, Trevor, we ask everyone that same first question. So here it is for you. Why, Trevor, do you do what you do?
So I'll confess that I hadn't ever actually really thought about this prior to us scheduling to speak. So this was actually a bit of a fun exercise for me. And I think the answer has something to do with I'm attracted to service. I think I enjoy being in service of people, of companies. I think it's a role in which I'm very natural to. Both my parents were, you know, lived lives of service. My dad worked for the UN his entire career, spent a lot of time in sort of East Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa. And my mother worked and still works as a public health official. And she sort of traveled all over. So, you know, I think you could argue probably successfully that they chose much more noble paths than I have. I think kind of, you know, watching them be in service of something, of other people, I think probably kind of trickled its way down to me.
Okay. And then why this particular area? What's the why behind that?
Yeah. You know, so I'm a lawyer by training. Studied law down in DC, you know, over a decade ago. And I'd always been interested in financial services. But I always thought of myself as sort of a typical corporate lawyer, you know, wear the suit, put the shoes on, go to the office and do law things. I had no idea what any of that meant in my early 20s, but that was kind of the image I had of myself. And I, along the way, when I first started learning about fintech, the big theme was the unbanked and the underbanked. And you would hear phrases like democratizing access to financial services. And that sort of thing really appealed to me. And so at the time, it seemed like a good opportunity to take something you're interested in, and then hopefully actually do good and help people and provide access. And I was not overly financially literate as a kind of young adult. And so it was very obvious to me what the importance of this stuff was. And so that was why I thought, you know, fintech seems like a good place to spend my time.
That's a great why. So you want to serve other people, help people in financial services, in underbanked population. That's a great why to have. Now, what is the number one use case or thing that you solve for the people that you work with?
Yeah, so think of FS Vector as a go-to-market consulting firm. And what that really means is we spend all of our time trying to help companies get their product in the hands of consumers. And so in the market structure of fintech today, most fintechs launch products through bank partnerships. These processes are very timely, they're heavily regulated, they're heavily scrutinized. And so trying to demystify that process for founders and help them chart a path from an idea through all of the approvals and building blocks necessary to get a bank partnership or a state license, if that's the path you go down, and work hand in hand with the product teams and the engineering teams up until the point where, you know, your app is in the hand of a customer and they're actually moving money, you know, transacting. That is kind of the core FS Vector product that we offer. And there is lots we do along the way. There's plenty to do along the way, but that is kind of the fundamental use case, that new product launch, we call it.
So you help fintech founders with their go-to-market strategy and actually helping them get there. Not just think about it, but actually get them to the point where there's something live in the hand of a consumer. That's a great thing to do.
Yeah, it's really much more than just the strategy. It's sort of the execution. We often use the phrase operationalize, which is a horrible word even for a native English speaker to say, but turning the documents, the policies into what does Rutger have to do every Monday at 10 a.m. for this thing to work, right? It's right down to to the nitty-gritty. And so we really roll up our sleeves and get involved in all of that.
Yeah. No, and that is super helpful because you have founders that might have a great idea and they really have passion behind something, but they also need sometimes a little guidance to sort of say, hey, how do we actually get this? How do we put this into reality? Now, when that happens successfully, how do your customers talk about that? And what do they say, the value they get from working with you?
Yeah, you know, hopefully if you ask them, they will tell you that, you know, in terms of quantifiable, let's say, metrics you could use to describe our work. I think that demystification of the process has a direct impact in time to markets. And as I'm sure you know, when you're dealing with, you know, like a seed round and you have limited time to achieve product market fit and get the product in market, every month that you have to spend on payroll, on other costs, is a month you're not making revenue, and that has a direct impact on the viability of the business, particularly in the early stage. So really, we get products in market quicker by getting our clients through these processes. We extend runway, and I think we really help give these businesses a chance to get in market, prove the idea, and see if there's something there.
That is very powerful. So get them to market as quick as possible. Obviously, no shortcuts, but getting them there and then making sure that they don't run out of runway. Now, I like to do this thing called futures thinking. Now, we don't know what the future is going to bring. We don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow, but I like to do this exercise where we think 10 years out. 10 years out is far enough out that we can really just think about what is possible. So I'd love to get your thoughts on what you think a possible future could look like 10 years out from now in the fintech space.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you said possible, because there's probably a different answer to what is possible versus what is probable.
Yeah.
I think what is possible is, you know, the combination of, you know, these agentic AI tools we've been seeing, the ability to embed them into the sort of authorization flow of a fintech product. If we go back to where we started, why I got into fintech, to provide broader access to consumers to financial products and services. That comes at a cost. And hopefully the impact of technology is to radically drive down costs. And so you would hope that these tools bring the cost of service at the account level so low that we can really start to get impactful products in the hands of people who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford them. I think that's what's possible. I think that is, you know, the thing that I would most like to see. What is probable, I think. Mm-hmm. I think what is probable 10 years from now is, you know, the overwhelming majority of large businesses now use stablecoins for treasury management, for international payments. And, you know, I think maybe even some B2C use cases, we see stablecoins and remittance. I think we're going to spend the next decade likely generating return for venture funds in the form of like rapidly expanding B2B products and services and revenue. And currently, I think the biggest kind of pie in B2B services is probably in the switch to stablecoin.
So that's very interesting. So possible future 10 years out, agentic AI could drive down costs so much that basically financial services become available for pretty much everyone that wants them and needs them. And there's still a lot of people today that don't have that. So that's going to be very interesting. And I do agree that stablecoin is probably going to play a role, especially in bringing down the cost, right? The cost structure of a stablecoin is much more affordable and therefore allows for many more people to have access to it. Now, if that possible future becomes reality, what can we do today to get ready for that future?
Well, it depends who the we is. I think that another area of financial services I've been really interested in is financial literacy. You don't see as much in this space, at least as much as I would like to see, but when these tools become much more available to a large number of people, you have to assume that the education required for them to actually use them becomes much more important. If you go back only a few years ago to the proliferation of brokerage apps, Robinhood, SoFi, etc., all of a sudden, it's very easy for me to, with not much knowledge, put money into account and start to trade stocks. I think that's a positive thing. It's wonderful for people to be able to take control of their financial health in that way. But of course, that comes with a lot of perils, right? Which is you might not exactly understand how these tools work. You might not know that a margin loan may not always be a positive thing for you. And so I could see that when these tools become more widely available, they land in the hands of people, small families, young families who might not have the education to know how best to use them. And so hopefully we can mirror this democratization with increased financial education and financial literacy.
I think that is crucially important because for many consumers, financial services are not something that's top of mind or something that you go like, hey, let me spend a Saturday thinking about financial services.
Correct.
It's kind of usually like when you get to a point, they are a necessary evil. I need to move money from A to B. How do I do that? Oh, now I think about a product. And it is important then that people make the right decisions and that they do get educated on how what the pros and cons are and what the potential risks are of using a product. I think it is very important to get people educated on that. How would you think we can best do that? What is that? What's the strategy to get people financially educated? It's always hard because people don't like to go back to school, right? They don't want to go like, oh, you're trying to teach me something. How do you see we can get the level of financial literacy up?
Yeah, well, the good thing is that, you know, the delivery of these services are largely going to be mobile application based. And through very thoughtful design, very thoughtful products, I think it's pretty simple to actually embed a lot of these features directly into a product. Now, there comes a natural tension in this, I think, because product designers are always worried about friction and user friction and customer friction. And they want to make it as quick and seamless as possible for someone to download the app, put money in it, and then spend the money. Because it is the transaction that actually funds the product that generates revenue. But, you know, to put this in kind of in plain English, I could very much see an app where when you click something, up comes a little pop-up bubble that is five lines of explanation about what this margin loan is and why it may make sense and why it may not make sense, right? Like it's very easy to build these kind of features in. And I particularly think about what has sort of happened in like the streaming world with how you have different tiers of memberships for YouTube or Netflix for your kids where you have a different set of features and controls. Wouldn't it be wonderful if your Chime app or your Chase app or your City app had a, it sounds ridiculous, but like a kid's version that has limited functionality that you can make available to a 12-year-old that they can, you know, can't do much with, but can begin to understand how money comes in, how it goes, what different things mean. And starting those sort of things early on, I think creates the interest, starts to build the knowledge base, and you end up with probably much more financially responsible adults.
That sounds like a great idea to do that, right? Build it into the flow when that momentum is there, not make it feel like school, but actually do it in the moment in elegant design. That's probably great idea and probably great point to wrap up our podcast today. So thank you very much, Trevor, for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Rutger. I appreciate it. It's great to speak to you.
And until next time, choose to be curious.